I'm opening.
We have
an eye, part of a nostril, two teeth. One of the teeth has a small cavity. Close call, folks, but I think we got here just in time.
Presented by Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro. This is Anatomy of a Movie. In-depth discussions and breakdowns of various movie titles. And now that you've seen the movie, let the dissection begin.
We had to.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. We are talking today about When the Game Stands Tall, the inspiring football movie about a high school team with a 151 game winning streak. And I wasn't expecting it to just go like that. Yeah. But obviously we will dissect everything. We have today on the panel Dimitri Panos.
Hello.
We have returning Marissa Serafini.
Hello, everyone.
And I, of course, am Phil Svitek. And today we have another great guest, Anna Margaret.
Hey.
Hello.
Hi,
Anna.
In the movie, she plays Laura, the girlfriend of Chris Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
Lori. That's it.
Lori.
Got
yes.
it.
Same
I
thing.
Knew I was going to mess up one thing.
It's okay.
See, with a sports movie, there's a lot of names to remember.
Yes, it's a great way
are.
To break the ice, though.
It is.
Yeah. I guess correct, yeah.
But, you know, so we usually start our shows with kind of just overall impressions. Now, it's a little bit different for you, but, you know, I obviously would like to hear it as well. But for me, I enjoyed this movie a lot. You know, in terms of the core message of what they were trying to get across, I think they did. And then the story structure, it kept me guessing because I thought it would be the final kind of end scene would be the big game against, you know, Pauly. Mm-hmm. But it didn't end up being that way. It was, you know, the state championship.
Right.
And I thought that was interesting and different. So I really enjoyed this movie. Yeah.
I did too.
I generally like sports movies because I love being athletic and like and acknowledging everyone who's athletic as well. But I loved in this film how they really portrayed it's not just about being, you know, building up your athleticism and being the best athlete out there. It's also building your character as a person. Mm-hmm. And I think they really touched upon that message so well. It's about building who you are, which will, you know, then reflect on the field.
Right.
Yeah, I agree with you a lot. You know, for me, sports movies today are really tough to do. Because there's only one of, like, three outcomes, or potentially four. It's either win, lose, or draw, or it's based off a true story. And that you can't really change a lot of what's happened to the team, you know, because you can look it up to know if, well, they're not going to lie about winning or losing about a certain game. This movie, I thought, thematically, I liked the movie. As you said, building up character. The whole theme about family and that family can go above and beyond just your blood relatives, mm-hmm. Which are, you know, especially to those who are in dire need of help, who may not have immediate family around. So a lot of that touched me. I thought it was really well done. And, you know, overall, I also liked that the coach played by Jim Caviezel was not your stereotypical yell at them football coach.
Right.
I mean, we've seen that a lot in movies. Mm-hmm. Most every movie, there's a coach like he's just yelling at the team, throwing the clipboards down, and
right.
you know, and that's the use of inspiration. Where with this coach, this I always I'm not gonna, what is it,
Lattiser.
Yeah, his approach was a much more mild mannered. Like, I'm going to inspire you through words. I'm going to inspire you by being a team, by being a family, by showing up and supporting one another. And I really liked that he was different and the way Jim Caviezel played it because he was just low key.
Right.
And like, how did, you know, but he inspired his team by not being the guy that yells at you.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I appreciated that.
What about you thematically? What was your kind of favorite message out of this movie? And, you know, in terms of what was your favorite part of the final product?
You guys pretty much hit it right on how it was more... It's a great film because it does... It's not just about the game and just about, you know, everybody being on the field and being your best. But it is about, like, building these boys as men. You know, like Laura Dern made a comment in the movie where she said... you know, my husband's making your son a man, you know, and it's a great line. And I was like, oh my God, I'm getting emotional. Like it was, I love that movie. I really do. And I just think it's just a good message overall about, you know, making these boys turn into good people and making it all about family. And I just, you guys pretty much hit it right on.
So before we fully dissect the movie, obviously want to talk with you a little about how you got involved in some of your outside projects. I know Dimitri's excited to talk about that, but you know, how did you become involved with this movie?
Actually, I'm originally from Louisiana, and we shot it in New Orleans. And what's good about me being as an actress, I live in California, but since I'm from Louisiana, I can work as local hire. So I got an audition, and I went in, and you know, they went to another callback, and then I booked it. And so it was through my agency and, you know, just that type of thing. It was regular audition process, and it was really cool, though. It was cool to be able to film it back home and it being, like, on big screens everywhere.
Right.
Did you kind of know what the movie was going to be about? I mean, did you know that at its core this was going to be the message, or was it just kind of, you know, here's your sides and, like, read these?
Well, for the first audition, they sent you the sides, and then for the callback, they sent me my script, and I read the script, and I was like, this movie is going to be killer. But I didn't think it was going to be that good. Like, when I saw the movie at the premiere, I was like, this movie really came to life. Like, the script was good, but the movie was incredible.
So seeing it at the premiere was your first time actually watching the full movie?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. I wasn't able to make it to the screening, so I was back home, and they did the screening here. So, but yeah, the premiere, I freaking love that movie.
A couple of questions, and then I want to talk about you, but regarding the movie, you know, I've had the opportunity, I've been very blessed and honored, like I've worked on a cool movie set. So what was your favorite part about being on set? Well, how long were you on set for? What was your favorite part of being on set?
Well, my favorite thing was being able to film it only 2 hours away from home, being able to go home at night, which is pretty neat. And I love filming on location, and we filmed my parts all on location, and at a normal high school, and then we filmed in a diner in New Orleans, and it was crazy because we kind of filmed it in the hood. The diner was like in the hood, and it was so cool because like there's all these people like driving by like what is going on, because it's this huge movie production going on, and that was really neat. And I filmed for like my part like a week, honestly, but it was like all throughout the week, and it was really fun.
I want to know specifically that scene, you know, in that parking lot when they come back and his father just says, you know, run the play.
Oh my God.
What was that like to see him just turn, because, you know, everyone in that scene, and, you know, there's so many, you know, you have the teammates, you have the families, and everyone really did their part to make that scene come alive. And what was that to be a part of that moment? Because so many things had to be right to make it work.
Mm-hmm. It was intense. Like, I didn't ever think that, like, in a movie that you literally push people. I really thought he was going to have, like, a stunt double because his dad, like, whopped him against that car. You know, did y'all see that when he pushed him against the car? He left a dent on that car. It was insane. It was crazy. And it was just so intense, and everybody was so in it. And, like, it was insane. It was so cool. Like, everybody was feeling it. Like, everybody around us was like, whoa.
And you gotta tell, you know, you gotta tell me, Clancy Brown isn't that much of a jerk.
Oh, no. He was the most fun. He was so cool.
He's done so much. He's one of my favorite character actors. Uh-huh. But he always plays that kind of guy. And at the beginning of the movie, I was hoping that he wouldn't turn. I thought he was like, yeah, you know, he's happy
father.
For the proud you know, but he gets really dark towards the end of that movie. And no, I didn't realize that, you know, he's actually pushing that kid.
Yeah.
Did he go, like, what they have done? It's like, what up? Why'd you do that to
me?
Yeah,
it was crazy. Alexander's like, whoa, dude.
Wow.
Whoa. I was like, don't hurt him. Oh, my
God. Did he apologize?
Oh, yeah. But it was funny. It was really funny because it was, like, it was intense.
Yeah, that That's
was
cool.
Was it unexpected on the first take? And then yeah. By the end, he was like trying to brace him.
Yeah, the Mr. Carter, he was like trying to like, you know, you got to do this. And we were walking through it and everything. And when they called action and we did it, he like whopped him. And I was like, ah! And Carter's like, okay, maybe a little lighter. It was so funny. But yeah, it was a little unexpected.
Yeah. Now working with so many seasoned actors in this film, what was that like? Did they give you any good advice for your career and whatnot?
With Jim Caviezel, I felt like I didn't really want to talk to him because he was so in it. And, you know, when an actor's in character, like, he's, like, seriously, it's like he lives, you know, you hear different actors how they use their methods and whatnot. And it's like he literally is, like, in the zone, like, totally, like, in his own bubble. Like, nobody talks to him. And then, like, when they call action, he does his thing. And when they call cut, he's, like, but he's still in it. Mm-hmm. And I didn't get a chance to meet Laura Dern, but that would have been amazing. But Alexander, he's super fun. And, you know, everybody just really was on their A game, which was really cool. Yeah.
So my question is... what was your favorite food in the craft services?
Oh my god! What did you like? Crafty, yeah, especially New Orleans. Like, yeah, what did they have? So good. They had Southern food. Yeah. I freaking loved it. Yeah, it's crazy. So good. That's my favorite part about being on set. I always said if I was to book a TV show and like be like a regular, like the lead or whatnot, I think I would gain like 10 pounds. Oh. Like, because I literally when the call cut, I go straight. Straight to Crafty because yeah. I love food.
Yeah, what did they have for like lunch?
When we filmed one night from like my call time was like 6 p.m. and we filmed till like 7 in the morning.
Yeah.
So like dinner was like at 2 a.m. and so they had like fried chicken, like barbecue chicken. They had like all the good sides and they were constantly bringing food around and it was just really cool. That's good.
Yeah, it's insane. So, you know, I had always heard Howard Stern talk about this and until it actually happened. Being on a set, yeah. When you're on a set, it's a lot of waiting around and waiting for the shrimp.
Yeah,
you get fed so well. Yeah. When you're working on a movie,
you do.
And it was just like, yeah, I was having on Contact. I had pheasant. Like, who has pheasant? Pheasant.
We didn't have pheasant. We didn't have pheasant, but...
What the heck is this? So that's why I asked that, because it's like, yeah, what's your favorite food? Like, what did they serve you? So, you know.
Regular food. Chicken, great. Steak, you know, that kind of thing.
Steak? See, that's not like regular food. Like, that's...
It's good food.
Good food.
But not pheasant.
That's great.
Now, were you aware of the whole story of the De La Salle football team? Did you know the story behind it before you... became a part of this project?
When I had gotten the call back and I read the script and whatnot, I did a little Google research and stuff because it's a novel originally. And so I didn't get a chance to read the book, but what's really cool is I have some family up in Northern California and they actually play De La Salle. My cousin, he's like the quarterback of their rivalry team. And they play De La Salle. They're like, we hate De La Salle. They're so good. And I'm like, that's so funny. But, like, I definitely knew about De La Salle, you know, going into it mm-hmm. before I started filming. So it was pretty cool.
Now, I want to talk to you about, okay, so in doing research on you, it was around the age 6 that you decided you wanted to be a singer, songwriter, actress.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then there was a weird little jump in time where... It was like your mom, it seemed your parents were very supportive of this.
Very supportive, yes.
Very supportive because you end up moving to California from Louisiana.
Correct.
Okay, how does a 6-year-old convince folks to like move to California? Like, well, what happened? Because I read from that and then you're in California. I'm like.
Yeah. At 6 is when I did my first performance for like a talent show.
Okay.
And it was, I performed Lucky by Britney Spears, and I remember I had my hair was blonde and long and curly and I had bright red lipstick on. My mom was like, because I went and I put red lipstick on, I came out and she's like, oh my goodness. And I go out and I sing and I literally remember that moment when I was on stage and I was like, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. And so after that, My mom got me coaching, and, you know, I went to singing classes and singing lessons, and I literally went to this one lady who I went through all her stuff. She's like, I have no more to teach her. I don't know what else to do. You got to do something with her. And so, at 9 years old, I started going to New Orleans and,
to New Orleans?
Okay. To New Orleans, because right. That's where it started, the acting and the music. So okay. We, tried to get involved in New Orleans, and then Hurricane Katrina happened. And so we lost all contact. Like, it was, you know, devastating. Everything was just demolished. And, my mom and I was like, Mom, what do? I want to do this, you know, and at nine, you know, when you know what you want to do for the rest of your life and your mom's like, I want you to be happy. I want to support you. It was just awesome because we went to Dallas and there's this expo and, you know, for like, want to be an actress, want to be a singer, come to this. And it was that kind of like got me out to L.A. at okay. nine. And then we moved out here. And it was just, it took some convincing, but my mom and my dad just really believed in me and they supported me fully.
And you have siblings?
I do. Okay. A little brother, a little sister.
Okay, now, and how old are they?
My sister at the time, yeah. Well, we're all about two, well, okay, my sister is now 15, my brother is 13.
Okay, why don't you give them a shout out? What are their names?
Ellie yeah. and Grant, I love okay. y'all. I miss right. y'all. And my little brother, when he was really little, he looked like the kid from Jerry Maguire with the little glasses and spiky hair. I swear to you, everybody would be like, is that him? And it's like, this dude is now grown up. He's like 16 at the time. I'm like, no, that's my little brother. And he wanted to be an actor. And so he got into it a little bit. But then he grew up and he was like, I don't want to do it. I'm going to be in Boy Scouts.
He grew up at the age of 8.
Yeah. He was like, I don't want to do this anymore. And my little sister, she's like, totally, no, I don't want to do it. I just want to be an artist and I want like a painter. And she's a swimmer and high school girl. So
now, wherever, cool. Okay, so were any of them, like, when this, that's a big move to mm-hmm. go from, you know, I mean, that's a big move. I did yeah. it from Boston. It's a big move. Were any of them like, how come we get to get, like, we like it here.
Yeah.
Like, listening to her, was there any of that sibling?
It was hard because for like 2 or 3 years, we went back and forth. Like, we would go back home, they would come out here, and my dad did the back and forth thing, but my mom lives out here with me fully, but we still manage to see them all the time. But finally, when I signed to Hollywood Records at like 13, we were like, you know, my little brother and my little sister were like, you know, they decided they wanted to be here too. My mom was right. like, if you don't want to be here, you don't have to be here. You can go to school. You can be back home. Whatever you guys want to do, we'll make it work. And they're like, no, we like LA. We'll come out to LA. And so they came out here and it right. was a big family out here and we kept our house back home, but we managed to all live here.
That's so. Great. And so right. when you signed that deal with Hollywood Records, that's about the time you started the Disney.
Uh-huh.
Like you were in like the Disney Channel
the
a lot.
The Disney World, yeah.
Yeah, the Disney World. And how was that for you?
It was a great experience. Yeah. I have absolutely nothing negative to say. It was wonderful. It opened all the doors that are now here for me. Mm-hmm. And it was super fun being a part of that little world.
Yeah, because yeah. You toured.
I did Radio Disney tours. Sure. And I traveled everywhere. It was so much fun. They took really good care of me and my family. And my little brother and my little sister normally came with me on mm-hmm. shows, and they would help sell my merchandise, and it was really cool.
So now from Disney, I understand you have a new album that's coming out. It's about to come out.
Well,
as they say in the business.
I signed to Hollywood at 13, and I was signed to them for like, well, I met with them at 12, signed at 13, and then I haven't been with them since I was 15 and a half. So I'm no longer a part of the Disney world. And so I'm now working on a new album mm-hmm. that is not a part of Disney. And it's definitely a more mature, grown-up version of me. But at the time, I was, and I did right. have everything going. But, yeah.
And I've watched some of the videos. Obviously, Britney Spears is a big influence with you.
Yeah.
And I had heard...
Thank you. I agree, too.
And, well, she's got a very popular show right now in Vegas. I think Vegas suits her. Mm-hmm. And vice versa. So, but obviously, in an interview, I think it was a red carpet, you had even said of this upcoming album that
it's definitely Britney influence. It is. Yeah. It's like I'm trying to bring the old Britney back with the new current, up to date, you know, sounds.
Right.
And you know, I want to have the whole like Britney show, like when she performs. But I can, Britney, I love you. You can sing. You're my girl. But I can sing too. And so that's the thing. Like, I want to freaking sing up there and dance and have a band and have all of that fun stuff. So, but she's definitely like a main influence. But my music is definitely pop, like Britney, but yeah, it's definitely like urban. It's got like some Rihanna. Like, it's really, really cool.
Who, I was just going to ask you, like, who do you have in your iPod?
Oh, gosh.
Like, who do you listen to?
Who do I listen to?
Most recently. Within the past week.
People ask me that, like, who do I listen to, and then how, what do I sing? Like, what I sing is completely different than what I listen to. I listen to, like rock. Yeah. I listen to rock, and I listen to country. I listen to, like, Kings of Leon. I listen to Paramore. I listen to, oh, my goodness, like,
What were you listening to today?
Luke Bryan, the radio.
The radio.
The radio. I really like that song. It's 5 Seconds of Summer. That's so pop. Then again, I listen to stuff that I actually sing too. But like when it's just me, like in my house, just chilling, I put on like rock stuff. But when I really want to get in a good mood, I put on Britney.
Okay.
Yeah, she makes me happy.
Have you, have you ever thought about writing your own songs and performing?
I do. No, I do write. Yeah, I co-write with like all my tracks, and the way we do it with the camp I'm working with, we go in there, we have a session, and we like start the track from scratch, and I give them an idea, I tell them what's going on in my life, and we sit there and we write whatever is like going on with me at the time, so, or what I want to write about, you know.
About how long does it take you to craft a song?
It really depends on the song, but sometimes, I mean, like, we could whip it out in, like, 3 days. Other times, like that means, like, creating it, like, from the track to the melody to the lyrics. But then there's the recording and the mixing, the mastering, and, you know, the whole production side. Mm-hmm. So I'd say a good couple of weeks to, like, really get a good song.
When you do that creative process, has there ever been a time, like, where the song, I don't know, maybe you're walking down the street, taking a shower, whatever, and this melody will pop into your head.
Oh, yeah.
Does that happen to you often?
All the time.
Have you ever turned that, like, has there been any song that you've done that like, took you, you hear this of music artists a lot, that, oh my God, like, their hit song took them 10 minutes to write.
Right.
Have you had that yet?
I've had the idea to write my hit song, but I haven't been able to sit down and write a song in 10 minutes. I am working on that. I would really like to have that power, but not yet. I'm getting there.
Well,
I'm getting there.
They say, it doesn't happen. A lot of music artists, from like Sting to Coldplay,
Sting.
Sometimes they'll, like, you know, every now and then they get inspired, but they say it's not normally like that.
No.
But every now and then, even the Beatles had.
Yeah.
You know, their songs that they wrote in like 10
minutes. Not musically inclined in any way, but this really good advice that I heard was, I think it came from Puff Daddy, whatever we're calling him nowadays. But
Puff Daddy.
He was like, okay, if you have a song, that's great. Now write 4 more and prove to me why that one is the best one.
Uh-huh. That's so true.
And I really like that kind of mentality of, like, no matter, or, you know, I've also heard it kind of vice versa of, like, okay, pick your best song. Now pick your worst song. Now make your worst song the best song.
And then
when you do that whole process and what is the best, now pick the worst again and make it the best.
Right.
That's
the never-ending cycle of music. It's insane. Like, I always feel like every song I make is, like, the one. And everybody's like, Anna, we have to do, like, 5 more. And they're like, we feel like this is the one, too. But let's do 5 more because I feel like all the other ones are going to be just as good as this one, if not better. So, you know, we always, you know, there's always new, greater songs that are always popping out and coming out.
All right, well, thematically, where would you say, you know, you said this is kind of a more mature you. If you had to kind of define that a little bit better for people, what does that mean? Where in your life, where are you now, you know, viewpoint-wise or whatever? Because, I mean, it's, you're right at the pinpoint of, you know, of the age of these kids in the movie.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a defining moment for them, and to a degree, it's a defining moment for you. You know, you're just 18, you're now officially an adult.
Yeah, doing adult things and, you know, being able to be on my own. And I would definitely say, like, my music, like, what really explains it is, like, in the lyrics, it's, I really talk about from, you know, going out with your girls and having a good time to, like, real life stuff. Like, I know it's the typical cliche, like, heartbreak, but, like, real words and, like, real emotions and, like, real things that are said. And, you know, I, just, like, life experiences. I mean, everything, that's what I wanted about my album was to be real. Like, I didn't want my music to sound like, you know, just like, okay, here's a song. Let's listen to this song. Do you like it? Okay, let's go record it. We don't do that. Like, right. I didn't want to do that. I wanted to start from scratch. I wanted to tell them what's going on in my life, and let's write about it. So, you know, anywhere from being on my own out here and, you know, the craziness and, you know, trying to stay humble and trying to stay grounded and trying to stay on track to, you know, different, you know, to going out with your girls and seeing a cute guy in the club and, you know, that kind of thing, you know? Mm-hmm. So, it's definitely, like, my album is definitely just, like, lots of life experiences.
And for you, it seems, for the most part, being poppy and looking at your videos, excuse me, is that it you seem to have fun.
Oh, yeah.
Doing it. I mean, your music, I love it. Is, yeah.
You really can tell an artist when they're in it for the right reasons is when they're really having fun. Yeah. And
what's the reception been like from your fans, from, you know, when you first started off with the Disney audience and demographic to now with your mature music?
It's so cool because they've followed me, and I think, like, that is just the best thing. That's what I'm going to thank Disney for the rest of my life. You know, I was able to get those fans at a young age, and when you get your fans at a young age, they're going to follow you forever. Mm-hmm. So,
do you feel a responsibility to them? Like, because they're getting older as well.
Right,
all
exactly.
Right, so in a sense, you're growing up together, you're maturing together.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, your music, you've come, within 4 years, you've come a bit of a ways.
Right.
Like, you were on Tiger Beat magazine. And, you know, now you're growing up, and what are you doing that's different to maintain your audience that is also growing and their taste in music is changing as much as your taste in music?
Yeah. I'm just like, you know, communication is key, and just being able to, you know, still communicate with your fans and still be able to, you know, make music that, you know, everybody likes. You know,
right.
The good thing about, you know, my music is I can relate to 13-year-olds to, like, my grandma, you know? So that's like the main thing about being, like, a well-rounded artist is being able to appeal to all different audiences. And so I think that's really cool, and keeping that in mind in the back of my head as I'm making music and not trying to sound too mature, too Rihanna, too mm-hmm. dirty, but not trying to sound too baby girl, too right. poppy, too Disney. You got to keep a good medium.
Right.
So
now, keeping a good medium too, my next question about you is:
mm-hmm.
I had read you have college dreams.
Mm-hmm.
UCLA Pepperdine. Has any of that changed? What are you doing for that? Because I find that a person in your position can be mm-hmm. very inspiring to people your age.
Right.
And so, what's going on with that?
I absolutely believe college is something everybody needs to have in their life, whether you go for a year or finish and get your master's. I mean, I went to college last semester, mm-hmm. actually, because I was back home, and I just wanted to try it. And I graduated high school very early, so I was like, I'm just home right now. I was getting my ducks in a row to be able to come out here on my own. And so I was like, well, I'm not doing anything, so I guess I'll go to college. And high school was never my thing. I was never involved in the sports. I went to the games. I was a big fan of the games. But me, as, like, playing softball or, you know, playing soccer, that wasn't my thing. Or being a cheerleader or being a dancer. I just went to school, and then I went home, and I did music. And being back home, you know, I went, okay, maybe I should start over a little bit. At 15 and a half, I came back home to Louisiana,
right.
and I finished high school. And so I went to a normal high school, and it was quite an experience. And I really just didn't want to be involved on that side because I knew what I wanted to do for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I graduated early, I went to a semester of college, and I really enjoyed it. I really think that whether you want to go and get a degree because that's what you want to do for the rest of your life, like in business or whatnot, I think people should go and get a degree just to be more knowledgeable about life.
That's a good...
And I think that was what I really learned, because after I finish... I mean, that's not even a good way to put it, but when I have my peak of my career and things are happening for me, I feel like I'm going to go back to college at 40, you know, and get a degree, you know, just because I want to be more educated and more smart about the world and, you know, about what I'm doing and my business. Mm-hmm. And also, you said Boston. I went to Berklee College of Music.
Oh, okay.
I had, like, I got this full-paid scholarship for, like, a summer program, and that was super cool.
Funny thing about Berklee with me, that was the location of my very first concert, which was Pat Benatar.
Really?
Was at Berklee.
That's cool.
That's really funny.
I lived at the dorms, 150 Mass Ave. You know where that is?
I know they were, of course. That's great. So, yeah. But good for you. So, all right. So you have at least a semester underneath your belt.
Yeah.
And you're very open. No, but you're very open. I just think it's important. You know, because I think you are at as you were saying, like a very important, that Phil was saying, you're at a very important part of your life, and some kids are at this crossroads, and to understand and recognize that going to college, you know, getting the education,
yeah,
you know, but you have a good life ahead of you, and it seems like your parents seem to have done a great job raising you.
Thank you.
You're very kind, and you know, it's
thanks.
You know. So it is a pleasure to have you here. So now I want to ask you social media.
Yeah.
Love, hate, what's your...
I feel like it is so important to keep in touch and to be a part of that. However, that is where I am just not the best at. I am not very good at Twittering all the time and Facebooking all the time. I'm good at Instagram because I like Instagram. But like... I feel like I really should get better at Twitter. But it is super important for every actor, every artist to, you know, do that all the time. And I'm making myself do it more. I just don't like Twitter.
Yeah, well.
I'm trying.
Mitri's new to the social media.
Yeah, I'm so new to it, and I have no idea what to think.
That's the subtext of this question.
Yeah, it could be. Well, no, but I'm curious because do you love it? Do you hate it? You know. Being in your position, do you feel a responsibility? I mean, reading so much about people doing stupid things.
Yeah.
You know, you got to be careful about what you might say or what, you know. And I was looking through your Twitters, and one of my favorite ones
it's
is...
not very many.
but it was very funny. And one of my favorites was, me and my boyfriend were splitting a pizza, and I'm pretty sure I ate, like, most of it. A few other pieces of the other one. OMG, hashtag fatty. What pizza were you eating?
Most disgusting one, it's Little Caesars. And I ate the whole thing. I literally ate the whole thing. We ordered two by accident. And I literally ate like the whole thing, and he had like one piece. And I felt super fat. But I love pizza. I had it last night. Probably have it again today. I love pizza. But yeah, I say stupid things like that.
I think the great thing about Twitter is that it allows you to still... you know, be in communication with your coworkers, your peers, and whatnot. Uh-huh. Being on set for when the game stands tall and you're around so many people who are the same age, do you still keep in contact in that way?
I guess the right answer would be yeah, but no. I think that's a good way to keep in contact. And after having this, like, interview, it makes me want to just be a lot better at Twitter. So I'm going to, like, really be a lot better at this.
I'm glad we can make that takeaway happen.
Well, we are a movie program. We talked about the movie you're in, When the Game Stands Tall. What do you go to the movies a lot?
I do. I love movies. Yeah, I love movies.
Last movie you went to?
At this one. In the case, I've seen it like four times in theaters. I can't stop.
Before, outside of When the Game Stands Tall.
Oh my gosh, it was just out. I went and saw The Purge 2.
Okay.
I like scary movies.
What's your favorite scary movie? out of Scream.
That is so funny. I love Scream. I literally watched all four in one day. I was like in a really weird mode and just watching this freaky horror movies, but I like the really freaky ones like Silence of the Lambs and like Hannibal and like those really creepy ones.
Psychological thrillers.
The really scary ones. Uh-huh. The ones that like really get you and are real. But I don't like all the slash stuff, like all that bloody stuff. I'm not into that. But I would love to do one. I would love to be in a scary horror movie. That would be fun. It'd be so much fun.
Are you into the sports dramas, like this type of film?
Oh yeah, I love sports. Especially being back home, like that's like what people freaking breathe. You know, right now back home it's tailgating time. Right. You know, all Absolutely. The football games are going on, and I'm actually going home next week for like a week, and I'm gonna like try to go tailgating. But I love sports movies, and I love football, and I love basketball.
Favorite sports movie?
I actually like Carter, the one that
Coach Carter.
Yeah. Coach Carter.
The one that, nice. That the director did of this mm-hmm. movie. He did that one. But yeah, it's pretty cool.
And you're a Saints fan? I'm going to assume.
Yes, I have to be a Saints fan. Of course, I'm from Louisiana. I am definitely a Saints fan, but I also like the Patriots.
Thank you. We got Patriots fans right here.
Yes. Yeah. I definitely love football. I'm that girl that's like, I'm the girlfriend that's not like, babe, can we turn this off? I'm the one that's like, okay, let's order some pizza. Let's like eat some chips and dip. Let's get down. Let's watch this. Like, I'm down. Like, we're going to have fun.
It's funny watching this movie, like when they had the title cards at the beginning saying, you know, what are the teams that had the longest streaks? And the New England Patriots, that mm-hmm. title card yeah. came up first. And you're like, yeah, with some sense of pride, I was like, yeah, but then in the back of my head, it's like, yeah, but they lost the Super Bowl.
Ugh. I know.
And then comes the title card about your the high school team. Yeah. And it's like, oh, wow, that sort of kind of pales in comparison.
Isn't that insane how many?
It was about 151.
That's insane yeah. to me. Like, it's like, is that real life? It's so cool.
Are they really that good, or do the other teams in that division just suck?
I think they were probably that good. I think they're just that good. But yeah, it's super cool.
Cool. Well, very cool. Why don't we take a quick break and then we'll come back and we'll talk more about when the game. And we're back, ladies and gentlemen. We had a lovely dissection of Anna's career. Now we're going to dissect When the Game Stands Tall a little bit more. And it's great because you're such a fan of the movie. You've seen it four times.
Four times.
Yeah,
four
that's times. Just in theaters and at the premiere, so that's five.
There and you lived it as well.
Of course, yes.
So then you're going to be quite the expert.
Hope so.
Well, you know, you already had mentioned that it was a book prior, uh-huh. you know, before creating the movie. So that obviously that's where it all started. I always find it fascinating, kind of the when they diverge from you know, the characters kind of in it, mm-hmm. You know, in real life. And I know Dimitri, you have some kind of stats about that. Chris Ryan wasn't a real character, correct?
Yeah, Chris. That whole story with Clancy Brown and the father, mm-hmm. apparently, like, that was made up for the movie to add more drama, mm-hmm. As well as the character, I just call him Ego Boy.
Tayshawn.
Ooh, yeah. Was also made up for dramatic purposes of to course. Add, like, conflict within the team. Mm-hmm. You know, I know that they took liberties with time and timeline mm-hmm. and, like when the coach had his heart attack, it was actually like out, like off season and things like that. And so, yeah, I mean, all those things, which is sort of kind of, you know, whenever I see inspired by, like inspired just means like a breath of like this, like we have this book, we're going to go, you know, this is our roadmap. Mm-hmm. And we know that these are the pivotal points that the team played. They won the 151. They're going to have to lose, and then what do they come back? You know, those parts are true.
Well, as I mentioned, you know, I really like, in terms of the story structure, how it, you know, we end on kind of the seniors.
Right.
And they're mm-hmm. gone, and, you know, and then we have that, you know, speaking of one of your scenes where, you know, the torch is sort of passed on. And it's like, okay, you know, you guys think, you know, you have it easy. Like, you guys are going to, you know, with the streak and the streak, you guys are going to have to work 10 times hard, whatever he says, to make that happen. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, you know, first game out of the gate, just boom, they can't accomplish it. Second game, can't accomplish it. And you would think that the buildup is to, you know, I don't know, I thought maybe like the comedic rule of three, that you get to the third game and it's against Polly. We build up to that, but we don't, and then it's the culmination of, and I really like that, that they added Chris, because it was, you know, in the end it became about the team, and what was best for the team is to take that knee.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, rather than just go for it, could have, you know, as much as so he could have gone in,
it was
he could have caused
scene.
A fumble, he could have caused anything.
Yeah,
you know?
No, it was a good scene. And, yeah, to your point too, I thought the movie was going to end at Long Beach Polly.
Yeah.
There, I thought that's where it was going to end.
I thought
they
so
mentioned
too.
It
while watching it, even though I read the script and I knew it was about to happen, I really felt like that was the end.
Right.
But then, you know, came back. And...
Yeah, you have to have that dramatic, you know, the dramatic button at the end of
course.
We're doing this for the team, and your favorite line.
My husband's making
your
son a
man into a
man. I thought that was
Which is way more than the father was doing at that
point.
So, yeah.
And it definitely, you know, I really liked the elements of, it played kind of, there was an artifice there, but, you know, the moments of like when, you know, TK's funeral.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, wasn't the cinematography beautiful?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Did you guys notice how pretty that was?
Yeah, I noticed the cinematography throughout the entire movie, actually.
It was so good.
What was it? Do you know what it was shot on? Did you kind of hang it up?
No. I probably should know that, but no. I'm sure it was something nice, but...
But Michael Lohman, who does the cinematography, he also just recently shot, you know, the ABC Nashville. So I was like, that's the reason why I like him, because I'm a big fan of that show as well. But I thought the cinematography was great and such, you know... literally hard-hitting football games, and how they really elevated it, and even the sound effects too, the bones cracking heads hitting each other. It was
cars denting.
So detailed, and it was hard to watch, and let alone hard to listen to, but it was so well done. It just shows like how much that these guys are literally putting out on the field. They're taking their heart out and throwing it on the field and like giving it all, and literally you know, living to the words of Lattiser, giving their, you know, perfect effort.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved it. It was portrayed so beautifully.
Mm-hmm. And it's so true, because, you know, in high school, I was friends with a lot of the football boys and baseball boys. And, you know, my boyfriend was like, you know, his life was football. And, you know, that's the thing is, like, these boys in the movie, it's like, that was their life. You know, when they would lose, they'd cry. And it's like, us girls were like, do they really cry in real life? Like, when they get, like when they lose? And it's like, yeah, apparently they all do cry. Like, it's their life out there, and seeing them, like, put everything out there and not caring if they're, like, about to pass out, they want to go back in. And it's like, it's real life. And I love how they portrayed, like, real stuff all throughout the movie.
And I can't imagine, you know, too, no, you know, it's one thing to lose a game, and, you know, it does happen in the sense that you know, you feel so bad that you cry, like, you know, if you lose a state championship game, you know, but there's teams that even win it, but they've had losses, you know, one or two in the season. But this is years of building, you know, of the streak, and you know, you're the ones responsible for the loss
keeping
of that. You know, it's more than just the game in that respect. And I really felt for every single one of those guys.
Right? Yeah. I really was emotional throughout. I don't know if it was because I was like watching a movie that I'm in, but I was really emotional. And all my girls that I was with, and like my mom, and like all these people I talked to who'd seen the movie, they're like, we got teary eyed. We were so emotional. Like, that was a really good heartfelt movie.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, right? I thought so too.
Well, I like the addition of the storyline of the seniors, right? You know, so the decision to go to Oregon.
Right.
I thought, you know, again, obviously the funeral, but then also just in general, you know, with his friend, you know, and the coach keeps coming to him, and he, you know, he keeps getting asked the same question. The coach is, you know, why this? Why is this is just so unfair? Why is this happening? And it's, you know, that's just life.
That's
there's
life,
you know,
right?
That was and that was I mean, I don't know. Speaking for myself, sometimes, you know, I've asked that question. You know, that was one of the interesting parts of the movie for me. The other thing that I appreciated about this movie, sometimes in football movies or in sports movies, but particularly football, it can be so overcut and so over-edited, like, to make the game look more exciting. And I'm like, well, with football, if you film it right, it should look exciting. That's why it's one of the most popular sports, period, on TV, because it's so exciting. Watchable on TV. And this movie didn't have to rely on like quick cuts and re-editing and loud music and or loud, you know, sound effects to accentuate the edits. This movie let the scenes play out. I thought it was really well. I really appreciated that because I didn't leave the movie with a headache.
Yeah. Right, for sure.
And then, Alan Graf, correct?
Alan Graf. Group. Yeah.
So Alan Graf, he also did Friday Night Lights, the TV show. We don't quite know if he did the movie, but he definitely did the TV show. And then, ironically, what I really appreciate, he did Dark Knight Rises.
Really?
The right. football scene the football with the scene. Not Pittsburgh Steelers.
That's cool.
But yeah, that must have been fun for him doing that one and directing Hines Ward of like, hey, here's where you're gonna go as things are falling. But you know, he sort of built up this great reputation, and it shows on screen,
right?
Yeah. In terms of the action,
and you know, and perhaps because if you have a good coordinator like that, you don't have to overcut to make your scenes.
Yeah, you know, no, it was you know one of my favorite plays is you know and it works so well in the movie when Danny swats that ball,
right?
Great scene, mm-hmm.
you know, and it's just like it was shot so well, and you know he's been fumbling balls. You know, the entire season from right. what it looked like. And, you know, in this one, he didn't have to catch it. His goal was exactly the opposite. Right. Like, just get it down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What was your relationship with Thomas Carter?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked that. I think he is so cool. Like, he is such a fantastic director. And I absolutely love directors that really direct and really, like, know what they want. And it's not kind of like, oh, you just do what you want. Like,
could you give us an example?
Let's see. He like added, and I think that's the most fun part about like being on set also is like making relationships. And like I made a really awesome relationship with the producer David Zelon,
right.
And like we still hang out. Like I went to Sony the other day and had lunch with him. Like he is just the coolest guy. And Thomas Carter, like nothing but fabulous things to say about him. He is just so in it and so in it and so like you know that's his life, and He's just, you know, looking at it from every angle when we're filming the scene. And, you know, it's just, I don't know, you can just tell when a director is like a legitimate, awesome, this is their thing, like, awesome director. And I don't know, I just thought it was really cool.
We kind of talk about this in that way. And, you know, there's movies that feel like, okay, this is a smart idea to make and they just make it versus like, okay, people wanted to make this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And with this, it's,
you know, like they wanted this.
They wanted to make it, right.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah, David Zelon.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, apparently, you know, he was at, I guess, his kid's game, and he was in the locker room. He found the book laying there, and he's like, what's this when the game stands tall? And he said he started reading it right there and then, and the light bulb went off in his head and said, this has to be turned into a movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then, you know, getting Thomas Carter, who did Coach Carter.
Right.
No, and again, we were talking beforehand. He was on a popular television show in the 70s called The White Shadow, in mm-hmm. which he was a basketball player under Ken Howard, I believe, played the coach. So, you know, he's had a history of being in sports right. shows and television
so
movies.
So he knows yeah. what he's doing,
yeah.
for sure.
That scene that you were telling us about, that we were talking about, the scene with, you know, in the parking lot uh-huh. at like midnight. What was there anything outside of the denting of the car that Thomas Carter did? Because you actually, your character tries to step in at one time, yeah. which is pretty bold.
Uh-huh.
In the script, or was that something that came up on set that Thomas Carter said, you know, as the girlfriend?
It was definitely, I mean, I didn't, like, it was the whole stepping up part that I mm-hmm. think he wanted me to do. Like, at first, it's like, I had said, my gosh. I'm trying to think. I, like, said my line, but, like, kept back, you know?
Right.
But he was like, you need to, like, get off the car, go up there, and, like, you know, step in. And I'm like, really? Okay, I'll do that. So, you know, that's where he, like, you know, the directors get involved is when they tell you, okay, as opposed to what's written, how about I want you to do this? And so right. that's definitely what he directed me to do, was step in and, you know, really, like, say, don't do that.
Was there any time in which you had an idea about something? Like, whether it be at the diner? That you said, hey, like, anytime like that?
Of course, I think as actresses, cool. we all, like, want to do something that's a little different or have ideas. But that's just a thing you just don't really say to the director. Can I? I mean, you. I guess if you're Laura Dern or if you're Jim Caviezel, you can say, "Hey, I want to do this." But like me, I wasn't about to say, right. "Hey, what do you think about me doing this?" You know, because I wouldn't want to like. You know, he has his idea. He has what he wants. I'm not about to go in there and be like, look, this is what I want, you know. But I think if I was, you know, of course, like that, Jim Caviezel mm-hmm. or Dern, then it's right. like, hey, I want to do this. You know, it just depends on being a seasoned, super seasoned actor.
You feel self-conscious sometimes?
Yeah, I just kind of know my place. And my place as an actress is to, you know, do what I'm supposed to do, know my lines, be in the character, be in the moment, be what they casted in that room, and listen and take direction. You know, that's the whole thing is, can she take direction? Right. And when they go in there and say, hey, try it like this. I've been getting that a lot in these auditions. Hey, you're super awesome. I love the way you took this role, but try it like this. Try it like that. And that's what they're looking for, is for you right. to take direction. So I think if I was to come back and be like, no, I want to do it like this. I think that'd be completely defeating the point of them being the director and directing you. You know what I'm saying?
Of course.
Absolutely. You know, and it's smart that I give you a lot of credit for, you know, being able to see that and pick that up, you know.
Same
the,
here.
You know, because it, you know, and the good news is it does come with time, you know, mm-hmm. and that trust factor. Because I, you know, we did a movie called Adventures of Serial Buddies, and we had Henry Winkler, who did a lot of narration, and, you know, we didn't really talk about the script beforehand. You know, we just kind of went in and we're going to record it. And he had done so much homework that we didn't have to give him any direction.
Wow.
You know, and so, again, I think, and it's part of growing up, too. You get to know who you are and mm-hmm. your skill set, and so...
For sure.
You know, and that, you know, tying that to this movie, in terms of, you mentioned Laura, I think Michael Chiklis and Jim, right. I think, you know, I think, you know, there's a cross-collaboration of how we're going to do this, but, mm-hmm.
For
know,
sure. For sure. I definitely agree with that. You know, you always see... I definitely saw a couple times, like, Jim Caviezel and Thomas Carter, like, off to the side talking. Now, whether or not they're talking about what he's about to do and Jim's ideas or his ideas, I don't know. But it's, like, it's definitely a good thing to be on the same level of this is what the director wants you to do and to do it. So, you know, I think that's... I definitely, as I get older and I'm more experienced and I do bigger, awesome, more things, I feel like I will one day say, hey, what about this? But as for now, I'm just going to let them do their job and I'm going to do my job and sit back and let, you know, be the actress.
That's great. That's a great attitude. Yeah. You know, I think you're thinking it's a very mature way to think.
It's a good way to learn and build your skill set and you, help make you a more versatile actress.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, being I'm not a new actress by any means. I mean, I've been acting for 9 years, but, like, doing bigger things, like bigger theatrical movies and TV shows, it's, like, a good part about... I'm a very bubbly person and I like to talk and whatnot, but to be able to sit back and watch and listen... is like a really cool thing. And I've just filmed Instant Mom, which is on Nick at Night, and that's, you know, TV and like movies is completely different, because on TV, you know, the director I worked with, his name is Jonathan, can't remember his last name, Jonathan, anyway, he would ask my opinion, like, how about this? What do you think about doing this? You want to do this? And it's like, okay, yeah, sure. You know, then there's the directors like that will ask you, and then it's like, okay, sure, but for me to just imply, not yet. But, you know, it really depends on the person. You know, it's just Thomas Carter, I just saw that he had a vision, you know, and so, but like TV, it changes all throughout the freaking day.
Speaking of vision, you know, I maybe you guys know a little bit more about this than me, but looking at the budget of, you know, production budget of $15 million, I thought for that amount of money, there was so much stuff in this movie. Mm-hmm. I'm like, how did they pull this off?
Yeah.
Right.
I know.
For that amount of money. I mean, can you guys speak to possibly, like, other sports movies? Like, when we did Draft Day, right? We right. talked about it earlier. That was right. way higher than this.
Yeah,
I mean, partly they had the NFL involvement and stuff like sure. that, but...
Yeah, I can't think of... I mean, you know, you'd have to go back to the original Bad News Bears for there to be a small budget, you know, yeah. for a sports movie. But what you accomplished for $15 million is pretty impressive.
And it's pretty smart to film it in Louisiana, too.
Absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
that helps a lot with the budget, yeah. you know.
tax incentives that they give for filming, and it's great for Louisiana economy. It's good for film. There are at least, that I'm aware of, two studios, if not more, that are in Louisiana whose sole purpose is for filming television and movies. So, I mean, it's really helped bring Louisiana back since the tragedy, which is fantastic. And it's great that they recognize that.
Yeah.
And it gives a new locale.
Right.
To, you know, to film in.
I also think it's great that, you know, it seems like such a high production value film for, you know, finding out it was only $15 million. And I think it goes back to also just the great storytelling that they went and the added dramatic effect that they had the audience also focus on. Yes, we only had literally a handful of football games, but it was shot so well and edited so well, and that just goes back to the great production just the people who were involved.
Definitely.
Now, the other, regarding this movie, another major component of this movie outside of football and family, it's very faith-based.
Oh, for sure.
And I know that the marketing was I think they went all faith-based.
Uh-huh. And that's my thing is, that was my favorite part, is just having, like you said, it's being faith-based. We didn't really touch upon this just now, like speaking, you know, throughout this interview, but, you know, that was one of my also favorite parts about the movie is, I am very much driven in a spiritual way with Christianity and whatnot, and for them to, you know, make so many references to, you know, just being, you know, faithful and spiritual and, you know, saying God a lot in a movie, like, you don't really get that very much anymore, and I really thought this, like, you know, kids can go see this and families can go see this and, like, really not have to tell their kids to close their eyes or cover your ears. And it was just such a good movie all around with, you know, making these boys turn to men in a good way, in a faithful way, and make, you know, having, you know, just completely just being, like, good all around. I just feel like the movie was just such a good movie.
I thought it was just bold in general. I mean, just even from the fact of them walking out and holding hands.
Oh, right.
You can imagine in the teen guy world, the pejoratives that everyone could, like, hurl at them.
Right, exactly.
You know? But it was also, I mean, by that point, there was a, you know, if it was the first game, I can imagine it being way harsher than if you're, okay, they've won 151 games.
Let them They're do their to, thing, yeah, for
you
sure.
Know? But, and so that's what, that, you know, I give a lot of credit to, you know, the first people that won that first game, you know,
sure.
Because it must have been so tough.
Yeah. And you know, I don't necessarily call me a heathen, you know, I don't necessarily gravitate toward a faith-based type of movie. I gravitate towards, I like to think, good movies.
For sure.
This movie didn't beat me over the head with it.
Which is really tasteful.
And it was actually, it was intertwined with the themes of family, of being a better person. So it wasn't like it was its own separate thing.
Right.
Within the screenwriting, it was found a way to intertwine with everything and make it seem, so it was a natural.
Uplifting. It was just very uplifting.
Yeah. And Marissa, I remember the first time you and I worked together doing this. Now, I remember this, our very first movie. That I was invited, I was very honored and touched to be invited to be on a panel to talk about movies, which I love. We did Pacific Rim.
Uh-huh.
And talking about this movie, Guillermo del Toro, robots fighting, and then Marissa comes up with this whole, she came up with a religious aspect that, as a geek, a fanboy, I didn't really see. But ever since, we've had these amazing conversations about movies, and I was actually thinking about you while watching this movie yesterday. And I really wanted to know your thoughts, too, because,
Again, like you said, Anna, I thought it was so tastefully done, and, like you said, Dimitri wasn't so overwhelming, but the fact that they had that short scene where he's reading the scripture from the Bible, just, like, how they apply it to life, and the going back to the golden rule of treating others, like, the way you would want to be treated, and helping others to have them be a better person, which in return makes you a better person. And so it's like that community, that bond, that brothership that they have. And I thought it was so well done because it also, you know, reflected throughout the family dynamic too, because, you know, you have to communicate, and, you know, we see Lattice are, you know, contemplating maybe he should go to a different college,
Stanford,
you know, and coaching. But it's just like, just And the just the aspects, going back to the family dynamics, like, you don't have to be blood related to be family. And then applying it to the college boys that are the two boys that were going to college is just like the importance of just, you know, having faith, having blind faith in that way, to the hope in the end it'll all be better, and it's, you know, the bigger picture and everything. That's where the winning, you know, becomes involved.
For sure. I definitely agree with that. It's super, super touching. And I like how they did intertwine the whole faithfulness in a tastefully way. Like you said, they didn't hit you over the head with it, which is really, really cool.
Outside of the scenes that you were in and the, you know, he's turning your son into a man, what was your, any other favorite scenes that you had in the movie? Whether it was artistic or whether it was...
Oh, my other favorite scenes, and this is like, I got so freaking emotional, like the scenes where they're in the where they're helping the vets, you know.
I was gonna say that.
Oh my goodness, I was like, I don't even remember reading this in the script, but wow. And how Tayshaun, the jerk, you know, how he goes, you know, the first part is like, you know, when they're on the bus and, you know, he sees the kid sitting and he like makes a move because that's his spot. And then they go into this place where the vets are and they're like interacting with them. And the funniest scene was when that guy, when he spilled his
catheter burp.
He spilled his pee all over him and he's like, what the heck, man? And he got so like grossed out about it. But like when he left, and, you know, when he left that place and had interacted with that guy, and the guy had told him his stories about fighting for his country, and he was like, man, why would you go back? He's like, man, if I could get myself back together, I would go back today, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't think that's exactly how it was said, but, you know, the gist of it. Yeah. And then, you know, when Tayshaun leaves and he, you know, he goes back on the bus, it's like, it was the cutest moment when he, like, looks at the kid and the kid's about to get up. He's like, no. And he like sits down. It's like, you know, it was so touching. It was like he learned something. But the coolest part was definitely, like, I thought one of my favorite scenes was that vet scene.
Yeah, they're all in there. And certainly that was fictional as well, but in this movie,
it was needed. It was such a big part.
It was a bonding.
Storytelling and the writing device to help that scene put in perspective for the whole team in general, because that's when they just lost and they're trying to get, you know, back together mentality wise, and then having the perspective for everybody, it helped like arc a lot of people and have the whole character development and their growth. And,
for sure.
And that's when they really started, the seniors and the juniors really started bonding.
Yeah.
For sure. It was so well-rounded.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, it was good.
In a typical sports movie, right, I thought they meet me at 8 in the morning. It was like, oh, here we go.
Because that's what a
typical... That's what a typical sports movie would have done instead of this. And, and where it's, you know, it's a combination of, there's so much emotion and yet, you know, there's comedy with the treadmill and, you know, he says that line of like, no, I just gotta, you know, I just gotta do better than you. I don't gotta go forever.
Right. It was so good. It was so good. And y'all made like, y'all had said something about all these, you know, fictional parts all throughout the movie, but it's like, I'm so glad that these fictional parts were put in the movie because it like really like, you know, got the movie to its highest peaks. And, you know, it's so cool.
It elevated. I will say that in this case, it elevated the drama. I mean, you know, it made some dramatic elements and it helped, as you said, with the bonding, with arcing of characters. One of my favorite scenes, it was towards the end when they were going to go play that championship game, and that kid that's sitting on the bus, the thin kid, you know, and he stands up and confesses and goes, look, I know I'm not very good.
I know. Like that, all the that girls went, aww.
Because I'm like sitting there going, yeah, that's me. You know, if I would... But he's like, I know I'm not that very good, but I'm honored to be here and part of this team. And then they throw him in the game.
I know.
And he gets rocked.
And it was pretty comedic, though. It was pretty funny. But it was like, you know, there was a reason for that. It was really cool.
I like that scene.
That's a cool scene.
Yeah, poor Arturo.
I know. He got rocked. I was like that.
But, you know, he did have his moment, and it helped the team.
Right.
So. And then the other funny line in the movie, too, was Beezer. And I forget the opponent.
I think it was like number 75.
Or some number, yeah.
Yeah, Buster. And he was Buster. Do you know why they call me Buster? Yeah, because you're stupid enough to let him.
Oh, I know, right?
What I said.
So funny.
I have a question. In terms of Michael Chiklis, I know he was in the movie, but for the longest time, I could not recognize him. And he was—he transformed,
right? Literally, it was so funny when I saw him. I was trying to figure out, like, because you know he was in that scene that I filmed, and my mom had to be like, "That's Michael Chiklis." I'm like, "Huh? Really? Oh, okay." It's so funny. That he was totally unrecognizable.
Did you talk to him at all? Or
I introduced myself. Yeah.
Was he? I mean, he seems like a very gracious
guy.
He's
funny. Yeah, you know, nice guy.
He's a Boston guy.
Yeah,
Boston boy, made big. Luckily,
I can say I've been to his house. He's very nice. I mean, you know, and his family is great too.
Yeah, and I remember I was at Universal in Boston, and he got his first big role was playing John Belushi. And you know, that was a big deal at the time. So it's nice to see a homegrown boy make it big, and apparently he has a very good heart. So,
yeah,
you know, and I was with you though. He did not look like the commish or from the Shield. It was the facial hair. I don't know, but I was like, oh, that's Michael Chiklis. I'm like, good pancakes though.
Yeah, right.
I think Michael Chiklis did a great job portraying this character because we're so used to him looking a certain way and then complete transformation. Then also just the character that he portrayed, you know, who's the assistant coach. He's so more outgoing, more, you know, a more A personality, or not, or B personality compared to Lannister's A personality, who's so, you know, introverted, and we have, like, that complete foil that he's more outgoing and more, and he will be the one who will yell at the
players.
He's the yeller. I think he did a great job being that balance to Lannister, to Jim Caviezel's character.
I also like he's the responsible for the poly game.
Mm-hmm.
And he has that line, you'll thank me later, because, you know, it really pushed, you know, our coach to really go to that level, because, you know, he wouldn't have necessarily done it himself.
Right. That scene, too, I found, you know, and that's when you go, your cousin said they hate it.
We hate De La Salle.
And I guess, you know, and again, that's one of those... it's like a Bad News Bears kind of a moment where the adults are acting like children, like going, we don't want to play you. Like, it's not fair. You guys, you can't win as many games. You're cheating.
Right.
All of a sudden, you're cheating.
You're just lazy.
Yeah. And it's like, no. And again, but when you look at it real life, too, like when the Patriots had that winning season, they were accused of cheating. And there was, you know, there's all that stuff going down. But it was just, we're not playing you. And it's like, good. We'll get Long Beach Polly to play us. And he's like, huh? What?
Why? You didn't talk to me about this. Right.
But it was a good scene. It was, you know, and I felt it was sort of kind of like behind the scenes, too, as to high school football.
Yeah. For sure.
So, yeah, I enjoyed that scene. So, are you proud of the fact, I mean, your movie, 20 million, you know, in the bank so far. Do you pay attention to things like that? Or do you have somebody else do it for you?
I have other people do it for me. But, yes, I do IMDb it, of course. And I've Googled that movie so many times, like when the game stands tall. And I Googled it and I typed it in on the images. And, like, my pictures came up and I was like, oh, that's so cool. So, yes, I pay attention to it. But I am so excited to be part of such a wonderful movie. And I was making this comment to, like, my actor friends. It's like every actor and every actress has those movies that they've done that they're just like, oh gosh, don't go see that. Like, that's one I did a long time ago, and you know, low budget. But it's like this one, I want the whole world to go see me in. I want the whole world to go see this movie just because it's so freaking awesome. Yeah. It's so good.
Can I? I'm going to ask you. This is a little bit more of a serious question.
Okay.
Regarding this movie, and it's basically dichotomy of critics and audience.
Okay.
Rotten Tomatoes, this movie has a 17%, which I don't necessarily agree with at all. I think that's overly harsh. However, the CinemaScore, now CinemaScore is based on audience polling, in which they do at theaters usually on opening weekend. Your CinemaScore rating for this movie is an A-, which says... that, which is good for the studio, it's great for TriStar Sony. It basically says that people really like the movie a lot, and they're going to talk about it in a positive way to help build its word of mouth, which going at 20 million is pretty good. Do you take, like, you're an artist, so how seriously do you take the criticism.
The other people's opinions.
Exactly. I mean, because you're in a business in which that's going to happen.
Of course.
Whether it's in a public forum like Twitter,
mm-hmm.
or
comments, you know,
how do you
whatever,
build,
yeah.
How do you build your thick skin?
Oh, goodness. To this? You know, when I started doing this when I was 12 years old and doing right. music, and like when I first released my first music video, Something About the Sunshine, I mean, I remember watching it on Disney Channel because it had the specific time when it was going to air. And then we looked it up on YouTube. And it's like, you know, everybody, whether you're amazing or you're not amazing, you're going to have haters. You're going to have lovers. And people mm-hmm. are going to hate just so that they get attention, you know. And so when I would read these hateful comments, of course, like, the first thing I'm thinking, like, I mean, this young girl, like she's so ugly. Like, she thinks she can sing. Her voice sounds like Mickey Mouse. Like, all these things. And it's like, you know what? If I'm going to sit, my mom was just like, Annie, you can't sit here and read these negative comments. Like, you just got to look past it. You know what you are. You have all these huge people in the business that know who you are, that want to see you succeed, that are putting the effort out to see you succeed. You know, it's like, you just have to really, you know, show your, you know, put your cheek the other way. You can't look at it. You can't pay attention to it. Criticism is definitely, I think, positive criticism is definitely needed.
Right.
But like with this movie, I know this movie is awesome. And, you know, mm-hmm. the people around me and, you know, even people that I don't know that I've seen the positive things, you just got to look at it. Is it more positive or is it more negative? And right now it's more positive.
Right.
And it's just overall, it's a well-rounded film. It's uplifting. Yeah. There is absolutely nothing for anybody to be like, man, it's not a good movie. I mean, unless they just have, like, they're biased towards actors. But other than that, it's like, you know, I don't really pay attention to the criticism.
Here's what honestly baffles me. If you, you know, we had a joke about what makes a great Sin City movie, right? And there's three criteria that I don't want to tell you what it is. But, you know, if you really break it down, you know, because I do want to take the time to defend this movie a little bit.
Sure.
You know, whether it's the cinematography, whether it's the music, whether it's the acting, whether it's the football,
absolutely.
Whether it's the script, and you break it down in these things, and you're like, what?
Yeah.
You as critics must be crazy
right.
to give it this score because it's harshly unfair in all those elements. You know, those are the elements of a film, and you know what? For the most part, everything is firing on all cylinders, and so I do not get it.
I don't get it either. I don't get it as being as such a low score for this because certainly this summer, I've seen movies that have deserved it and haven't gotten it. You know, movies that have made me angry, you know, Under the Storm or Into the Storm, you know. And this movie, I didn't walk out, you know, I didn't walk out feeling that way. I was just curious as an artist, again, you know, you have to take it. And you're right. That's one of the things that frightens me the most about social media.
Right.
Is that there's
so much negativity.
And it's anonymous.
Always.
At least with the Rotten Tomatoes. There is a little, you know, there are people who aren't anonymous. Like, you can track down a critic
yeah.
to a newspaper
but,
or whatever.
You know, I don't
but
even
still.
Care at that point.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't care. Like, if they're going to sit there and say negative things about the film that I was in and I know how amazing it is, it's just like, I kiss my butt.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, mm-hmm. like, when I did my Disney stuff, honestly, yeah, that is some bubble gum pop stuff.
Absolutely.
But you know what? The video was good. The movie was good. It's Disney. It's
yeah.
Disney. You know what? Get over it.
And you're very fortunate, too. Again, I said this when first met you. You've accomplished so much.
Mm-hmm.
And
you're
18, but you've accomplished so much. Like, at six... between 6 and 9, you're negotiating with your parents to move to California. I'm negotiating with my parents to get a Star Trek playset. So, you know, there's a major difference, and you have accomplished in being part of the Disney family. When you look at so many people who've come from Britney Spears,
of course,
being one of them.
Yep.
I mean, you know, it's, you know, they've bred a lot of talent who today is mm-hmm. considered to be great pop and whatnot. So. You're in good standing, and
I
you're doing
that.
It so
but,
much too.
So, you
singing,
know,
acting.
What
you're
I like
multi-hyphenate at 18.
You know, tying the movie into that kind of philosophy. I think what's nice about this movie is that if you know the audience that does go see it, their lives can get changed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I have a couple of quotes that I do actually want to read from real life players from De La Salle.
My experience playing football at De La Salle taught me how important work ethic is, accountability, and mental toughness is in succeeding. To this day, I find these three traits to be the biggest impact on my successes and failures. And that's from Chris Biller, class of 2004. We have Britt Cecile, who writes, I know that my time at De La Salle is what set me up for success. I learned how to push myself to accomplish things I never thought possible, both individually and as part of a team. Being pushed to act with integrity and unwavering determination on and off the football field made it possible. These high expectations are what set DSL apart, in my opinion, and I wouldn't be the man that I am today without having gone there. Aww. I am a Spartan for life. And then, you know, there's about four pages worth of all of this stuff. But, you know, that's, you know, I think if that, at the very least, if a handful of people's lives can change, you know, and that's the power of this movie.
Sure.
Yeah.
And my high school years, you know, when I think back to my, I loved high school. I had a great time when I was in high school, but I was never, you know, I don't know. I like, you know, I love the high school that I went to, Peabody Veterans Memorial High. Mm-hmm. You know, but you're right. If a school can inspire people to do better, to be a better person, to pick a better, to go to college and to inspire those people to be better people. I think what the educational process should be to begin with.
Yeah.
So, well, remember you know, I don't know if you had a chance to see Boyhood, but there's a, you know, without spoiling it away.
I wanted to see that.
It's really good. There's a moment that you think is kind of almost like a throwaway line, you know, that's like, hey, you should go to school. And then it comes back of like, you inspired me to go to school.
Go to school.
Mm-hmm. You know, and so it's, you know, it's nice to see that element, you know, and, you know, coming back.
I think the great thing, the amazing thing that this film really does is the overall message line. And I said that before, because it is the importance of having a strong foundation within everyone, because that really, you can build upon that and then really sets you for life. And it's not just because you're in high school. It really is like the start of everything, because right. You start early. And then you build upon that, and it will literally make you a better person, help you just be better in everything and with everybody, you know, for the rest of your life. It doesn't have to just be high school or college or wherever it is you're going. It's the foundation that's so important.
And I think going thematically back to, you know, when the game stands tall, family. Again, I don't know your family, and this is the first time that I've met you, but you just sitting here, you have a good head on your shoulders, thanks. And I do attribute that to family.
Oh,
you
know, absolutely.
Very, very much so. It's well grounded.
Yeah.
You seem very well grounded. You're very open, and you've been honest. We can't thank you enough for being here.
Thank you.
No, seriously.
It's
a great treat
awesome.
For us. But you can tell that these kind of lessons were instilled in you. And you seem to have brought it into this movie. And I think that's why you love this movie so much.
I think it's
a special project for you.
It was super, super special. I'm very honored to have been a part of this movie. And you guys are awesome for having me and to talk about this movie in depth like this. I love it. I haven't really gotten a chance to talk about it like this. And I really appreciate you guys for reaching out to me.
So let's do final thoughts. And then
sure.
I'll let my final thoughts be last, only because do we want to start on this side of the table or this side of the table?
Yeah, I mean, my final thoughts of this movie are, you know, my first experience in the marketing was that it was faith-based. And sometimes that turns me off, because sometimes it seems like it's pushing the faith-based aspect and it's telling me, hey, you got to act this way and whatnot.
Yeah.
But it was also a sports movie, and I enjoy going to sports movies. So when I sat down and watched the movie, at the end, I said, you know, this movie didn't suck. I go, it didn't make me angry. I go, there were parts of it that I got emotional. There were parts of it that I felt akin to, that I found relatable to. and that pleasantly surprised me. I enjoyed Jim Caviezel's performance. I really loved how he was not the atypical, stereotypical coach that yells at his team. Mm-hmm. I liked his, I liked how he was sort of underplayed as a coach. He's not the typical coach that we know. The cinematography looked good. I enjoyed seeing you. You know, coming in, I was looking for you in the movie. So I was like, oh, okay. Now I have a good idea of, what she looks like and all that. It made my research that much more fun. So at the end of the day, when I walked out of the theater and I was walking to my car, I was thinking about the movie and I was like going, you know, for the most part, this movie worked. It got me thinking about a couple of things that I didn't expect. And, you know, it was a pretty decent sports movie all in all.
Yeah.
That had some good themes.
Marissa?
I generally love sport films, and this dramatic film, it really hit home for me because, you know, I am mostly faithful because, you know, I grew up in a religious family and, you know, I grew up Catholic. So faith-based was a big thing in my life.
That's awesome.
And so, like, having that foundation, I always loved whenever Lattice spoke because his words were so meaningful and it applies to everything in life. Mm-hmm. And then there was that quick moment where he says, you know, talking about the winning streak, is winning is just a result. That's not the stuff that you put in, the effort you put into it. It's just something that happens. And I loved how the fact that, like, he didn't touch upon, we have to win, we have to win. It's what you do to win. Right. It's the first steps you do to get that end result. And that's what I think people kind of lose side track of. And because they think of the end result, they don't think of the actual process. Mm-hmm. And I think that so many people need to do that. And I love that message throughout. And people need to do that in life. And I think it was so well done. And I love this film. Visually, it was amazing. I'm not a big football fan myself, but watching this film, I kind of want to go to the Super Bowl or something just to, like, experience it.
Why don't we start with a Sunday night game or something before we get to the Super Bowl?
Like, I want to go to football games. I kind of regret that I didn't really get into it. Maybe I should. Yeah. Maybe I should. So, you know, for that, it was fun, and I loved seeing so many different faces and just the whole story of brotherhood, and I think it was amazing.
Very good. Aww. Any last words?
That was awesome, actually.
That was really good. I can't really top that. I honestly, you know, obviously I'm in it, and I'm a huge supporter for my movie, and I just, overall, it's absolutely, you know, uplifting, which I like, and it's it teaches you a lesson, and it's very beautifully done. I absolutely love the cinematography, and the actors are all on their A game. And the film overall, I think is super, super great. And I'm super happy to have been a part of it. And you know, I like my favorite part is just walking out of there feeling like you. Like it touched you, you know, and I definitely felt touched when I left. I was super surprised because I knew it was going to be good, but, like, watching it, I was like, this is awesome. Like, I'm in this movie. This is so cool. So that was definitely the coolest part.
And for me, what I liked most about it was, you know, the streak was, it was never about the streak. And they didn't say this, but it was pretty much like, while you guys are practicing football, we're practicing life.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. You know, and that's literally what it is. And that, to me, just what makes you a great success, obviously, in the football game, right, but also just in life.
Stick to the plan. That was another one of my favorite scenes, too. It's like, Coach, what am I, you know, he just lost his best friend. He already thinks he's cursed. And it's like, what am I doing? And he just looks at him and says, stick to the plan. Go to Oregon. You know, and that's a good thing. So, can we leave on a quote? I got this great quote.
Sure.
Do not settle for anything less than greatness. And that applies in all aspects of life. Do we know who said that?
Tell me.
You said that. You tweeted it on December 20th.
Yay! Isn't that great?
All right. And on that note, thank you guys for joining us for yet another Anatomy of a Movie dissection. If you have any comments, leave them below. We love reading them. We love interacting. We have a whole separate show that we do Wednesdays just dedicated to fan interaction of those comments, since we obviously don't get as much of a chance to talk about it on these shows. I want to thank you on behalf of Dimitri and Marissa.
Yeah, thank you
for joining us.
Thank you, guys. It was a pleasure having you.
Yes, thank you. Where can everyone follow you on your social media?
You guys can follow me on Twitter, Talk to Anna. You can follow me on Instagram, Anna Margaret Music, and Facebook, Anna Margaret.
And Dimitri, for the 6th week in a row, we're promoting your Twitter.
It seems like forever, and I'm only up to like 9 followers.
No, we lost some followers. We were up to 28 last week.
Well, you know, we're working on it. I've been blocked. And
oh, no.
It's DMovies 1701. So DMovies instead of B-movies, DMovies 1701.
And of course, follow us on Twitter at Movie Anatomy, anatomyofmovie.com for more dissections. We'll see you here for the next one. Thank you guys for joining us.
Bye, all. Thank you.
Bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.